We are back with part two of Nikki Bianco's story, and it's going to be a short one today.
Promise?
Promise, promise, promise.
Okay, but before we start, let's do our question of the week.
And do tell us what is the question?
So, this is from YouTube, and somebody asked, Castucci was obviously a sharp, shrewd man, so why did he think it was a good idea to outbid Howie Winter? So we'll be discussing all of this much more in the coming weeks, but I do just want to say that I don't think anyone was really aware at the time about how the balance of power was shifting. And, we're looking at this in hindsight and
Right.
knowing what we know from stuff Sonny Mercurio came to, I think if Sonny Mercurio hadn't stood up and said what he said and did what he did, I don't think, and I think Sonny was kind of inspired by Jack Kelly, to be honest. So even there,
True, true. I
but
agree with you.
I think in hindsight, knowing what we know now, it's easy to say that. But I don't think, at the time, in the moment, I don't think Castucci was like, oh, I'm outbidding Winter Hill. You know what I mean?
But that at that time, you're talking mid-70s, I don't think anyone really imagined, and no one knew what the status was as far as the guys being informants. No one knew that.
Right.
That's how we're going to be covering Winter Hills in the month of June.
We'll call it Winter Hill Month.
All right, so let's get into Nikki. The first episode we covered him in was New York State of Mind Part 2. We focused on him and Butchie Miceli. But let's do an abbreviated version of Nikki's background and his rise through the ranks, please.
Sure. I think we need to do this little episode since Nikki's presence and then later lack thereof played prominently in the demise of the New England mob.
Okay, Nikki was the youngest of five children. He was born Nicole L. Bianco on March 21st, 1931, in Providence, Rhode Island, to Angelo Bianco and Concetta del Vicario. Both of his parents were from Pani, Foggia, Puglia, Italy. The family moved from Providence to Brooklyn in the late 1950s, reuniting with his older brothers who had been living there since the mid-40s. There are two versions of who made Nikki. The first is that shortly after Albert Anastasia was killed in October of 1957, but before the Apalachin meeting, Nikki became a made member of the Colombo family. The second is that he was made by Raymond Patriarca in 1963.
Well, I don't know about you, but I believe the NYC story. Weren't the books officially closed from after Apalachin through 1976?
Is always been the official line, and that the first round of inductions was supposedly in 1977, including Sammy the Bull Gravano in New York. So the constant story is, but we see these crazy things pop up all the time.
Raymond seemed to have his own little side thing going on in Rhode Island.
Well, we can dive down that rabbit hole when we cover the induction ceremony of 1977 in 2 weeks from now.
Okay, back to Nikki. His first arrest was in May of 61 when he was one of 58 pinched in a strong arm case. His occupation at the time of his arrest was that of a salesman. He and Anthony J. Cameron were also charged with consorting with Crazy Joe Gallo. Fast forward to 1963, Larry Gallo approached Nikki for an introduction to Raymond Patriarca for assistance with the then stalled out negotiations between the two factions of the Colombo family.
By that summer, the New York City FBI field office had caught wind of it and sent an airtell to the Boston SAC and J. Edgar Hoover requesting a verbatim transcript of any and all conversations between Raymond and Nikki from the wiretap at the Coin-O-Matic. The Boston SAC complied and provided them with two full copies of the transcripts.
The conversations went into detail about how many bullets Nikki and his men had fired and how they couldn't believe their intended victim got away. Several pages were filled with Nikki's account of how things were going, including Charlie, how do you say it?
Le Cicero?
Le
Le Cicero.
Cicero's relationship with Carlo Gambino and how he couldn't trust Charlie, but Larry Gallo trusted him. Nikki was also angry over the slaying of a businessman who had given financial assistance to the Gallo crew. But it wasn't all business, of course.
Listen, we all need a little bit of gossip now and again.
But wasn't there a study recently on how gossiping is healthy for you?
Yeah, but they used to say that smoking was healthy for you too. But isn't this and podcasting in general just a glorified kind of gossiping?
I mean, yes. So is the news.
Well, this is true too.
As for Nicky, he settled for chatting about Joe Gallo and his relationship with Frankie Martin and Carmen the Snake
Persico. Persico.
And how they were all inseparable. So at the time, Nicky was still living in Providence as well as his sister Constance. Their brother Angelo and sister Mary were in Barrington, and their other brother Frank was in Riverside. On September 5th, 1966, their father passed away at the age of 76. Nikki's mom passed less than 6 months later on February 15th.
While Raymond was away in Atlanta and later at Howard, Nicky was quietly working behind the scenes. Since Nicky was originally part of the Colombo family, I do want to mention that on June 28, 1971, Colombo was shot 3 times at the Second Italian Unity Day rally in Columbus Circle, sponsored by the Italian American Civil Rights League, which Colombo had founded. The would-be assassin was killed on the spot by Colombo's bodyguards. Colombo never recovered and died on May 22, 1978, from a heart attack.
Well, I will say that except for the hit on Joe Schiavone in November of 74, Rhode Island was pretty quiet under Bianco's leadership.
But that all changed when Raymond returned in January of 1975. In March of 75, it was rumored that Stephen Peanuts the Dwarf Broccoli and Nicky would be subpoenaed to appear in front of a Rhode Island grand jury. Broccoli was an old-time wise guy who was famous in the 1930s for holding up dice games and bookies.
Really classy. But I was pronouncing it Broccoli.
Well, I'm sure you're right that it was Broccoli, but the man had a nickname, Peanuts the Dwarf, so if you can forgive me for mispronouncing it as another food item, broccoli.
Peanuts the Dwarf. Hey. I did see Peanuts in there somewhere, but I missed Peanuts the Dwarf.
Oh. That's what the newspaper said.
Well, the feds might not have been able to pin anything on him yet, but the IRS caught up with Nicky, and on April 30th, 75, he was convicted in New York on 5 counts of failing to file federal income tax returns from 67 to 71 and sentenced to 4 years in prison. On May 7th that same year, he was put on the stand in the Dickie Calley murder inquiry after the state claimed that he was the number 2 man in New England after Raymond Patriarca. Nicky told the court that he was in the floor waxing business, but the government claimed that Bianco was Patriarca's second in command.
In April of 1977, a federal courtroom in Brooklyn was abuzz with the, if not dramatic, but melodramatic rumored contents of the Patriarca tapes. Nicky's appeal hearing seemed to be about everything but his unpaid taxes that resulted in a 4-year prison sentence. Special Agent Martin P. Conley took the stand, testified about the murders of Dickie Calley on St. Paddy's Day in 75 and the murder of Denny Raimondi earlier that month.
Hey, didn't you know they claimed Denny was number 3 in the New England mob before his demise?
He was Polish. He was using his stepfather's surname, and supposedly Raymond made him too.
I have so many things I want to say, but I'll wait until we do the making ceremony of 77 in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Connolly testified that he had interviewed Raimondi in 1971, but didn't say what was discussed as it would have been deemed hearsay. Later that afternoon, another agent named Thomas Lardner took the stand. Nicky's attorney grilled him about the illegal wiretap at the Coin-O-Matic from 1964 to 65. He argued that the 302s were generated from the wiretap could not be corroborated as the original tapes had all been erased. Lardner read aloud the notes that he said he made himself while listening to the wiretap on February 17, 1964. Quote, Nicky Bianco enters, just arrived from NYC. Conversation between Raymond Patriarca and Nicky over Gallo-Profaci feud. Raymond says the commission will choose a new boss, end quote.
It's not exactly like word for word. I don't know.
Well, again, none of those from the Coin-O-Matic were word for word. We never actually got to hear any of the tapes. These were all summaries that were done. But that's with all of the 302s. All of the 302s, whether it's an informant's statement or from a wiretap, it is always summaries of the conversation.
Which to me is hearsay, but okay. Well, I want to point out here that Nicky's name was never redacted in the 302s, which to me indicates that he was never an active informant. But I like the next section. Quote, Nicky says he has a .38 on him. Raymond says to put it in the barber shop, unquote.
None of that makes any sense. Like, first of all, you're a wise guy with another wise guy. Oh, gee, I have a gun. Like, I don't even understand what any of that means. And he was going back to New York the same night.
Maybe it was code.
Well, maybe.
To kill somebody. I don't know. That just came.
Or the feds just made it up.
That's true, too. None of it made any sense, but the judge refused the defense's motion to strike the feds' testimony from the record. But one of my favorites about Nikki's unpaid taxes was from an unnamed informant. Quote, Nikki was always a cheapskate. All he had to do was declare some income from betting the horses, pay a few bucks in taxes, and the feds could never have nailed him. He should have known better.
Oh, they had it in for him, and they would have found another way, I'm sure.
Well, as part of Nikki's plea agreement, he was given a reduced sentence and was released from Danbury Prison in Connecticut in July of 78. Upon his release and as part of his parole, Nikki began working as a paralegal at Attorney John Cicilline's office. Cicilline claimed that Nikki was working for him personally and not the law firm, researching several cases. When the press contacted Raymond Patriarca about the situation, he said, quote, Bianco and Cicilline don't work for me. Why are you always calling me with this stuff?
Poor Raymond. I don't know what to say, though, about Nikki being a paralegal. There's no words there. But in 1981, it was revealed that the feds had bugged Cicilline's office on July 15th, 1980, to glean information about Nikki and other clients of Cicilline's.
When William Kunstler caught wind of it, he filed a $100 million lawsuit against the government. Some 30 individuals fell victim to the bug, including Raymond Patriarca himself. The suit also requested that the bugging be ruled illegal under the 1968 Omnibus Crime Control Act and that all tapes and transcripts of the bugging be turned over to the plaintiffs.
In the meantime, Kunstler's lawsuit didn't go anywhere, but the recordings were used to charge Bobo Marapizzi, his wife Marie, Jimmy Chiello, and William Furlay, I'm not sure how to say that, with bank fraud. 2 5-minute-long conversations were played for the jury during their trial in 1982. The first tape was of a conversation between Furlay and Nikki about a loan application he submitted to a bank. Furlay stated that he listed his employment with a construction company and at Chiello's restaurant. Nikki advised him to make sure Chiello knew, to which Furlay replied he already did. Conversation ended with Nikki cautioning him that he could be prosecuted for lying on the application.
Well, in the second recording, Furlay could be heard joking with Nikki about how he got Bobo and Chiello to lie for him about being their employee. Really racy stuff there.
The jurors certainly thought so. On October 28th, the trio was convicted on all counts. And on that note, we're going to wrap this up. A quick one is promised.
Hey, we kept our word for a change.
Next week, we are going to be back with Napolitano's tale, and that is going to be a long one.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
We may end up having to do it in 2 episodes, but we'll play it by ear by now. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.